Backseat Producers, episode 231, Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is Lena.
And we are the Backseat Producers. Welcome. So, today, as it is today, June 6th, this episode will be releasing on Monday. We ran out of spare episodes.
Yes, which we've consumed our buffer now.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, but I'm going to try to fill that back up soon. We do have... actually, there's a couple of... by the time that this podcast drops, that'll be old news, but we still find them worth mentioning. First, today, June 6th, is Mr. Pinilla's birthday. So call him Adam, call him David. Call him and tell him happy birthday.
Just don't call him late for dinner.
Or don't call him on the phone. He does not like it when people call him on the phone.
According to his tweets, he is at dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
And not getting his steak and fries that he wants.
Yeah. How dare they?
So, yeah, if you get a chance, shoot him an email or send him a tweet. Shoot him a link to some furry porn. Whatever. And tell him,
he's easy to please.
Yeah, tell him happy birthday. Also today, a visionary of science fiction passed away this morning.
Yes, a huge literary lion.
Yeah, Ray Bradbury passed away. So, to honor Mr. Bradbury and his contributions to television, science fiction literature, film, everything he did.
What didn't he do?
Yeah, he was pretty.
Over 91 years, you can accumulate an awful lot of careers.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty impressive when. You can have a 50th anniversary of a story that has been made into a movie, that has been, you know, made into graphic novels and a number of other things.
It's become a cultural icon.
And still live to see that, you know, mm-hmm. to see that kind of notoriety.
He just didn't exist in the science fiction world. He did screenwriting. He did the 1950s version, the screenwriting for the 1950s version of Moby Dick, which was probably still one of the best adaptations of it for film.
Yeah. So what we're going to do to honor his memory, and because we need to keep up our record is the Recently Dead Guy podcast, we are going next week to talk about Fahrenheit 451.
The 1967 Francois Truffaut.
The Truffaut version, yep. And okay. And as of this morning, it was not available on Netflix.
Whoa.
As of this evening, it is.
Wow.
It's available on streaming. So.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That didn't take long for something to filter down.
Yeah. So that was very cool of Netflix to make that available.
Very. Which is good. I'm actually going to throw it in my queue right now.
Yeah. I noticed they tweeted about it earlier, so I threw it in my queue. And this was after I had already gone to my library's website and secured a DVD copy, so.
And also try to find the 1950 version of Moby Dick starring Gregory Peck, Richard Basehart, Orson Welles.
Yeah.
And it's actually a really, really good adaptation. And it's I wouldn't say very atmospheric movie, but it's probably one of the best performances by Gregory Peck in a long while.
I think we could probably go back and check that one out later.
Mm-hmm.
Because we kind of have a themed topic we're gonna shoot for right after we do mm-hmm. Fahrenheit 451, but yeah, I think going back and touching on Moby Dick might not be a bad idea.
What theme is coming up after that?
Summer.
Summertime.
Yeah, we don't have a listing of our movies yet because we're kind of just doing a. We're not going to get too specific with the theme.
We're brainstorming a lot of them here.
We really started the brainstorming this morning. So by the time we get around to recording next week, we'll have a much better idea of probably 4, 5, 6 movies that fit the summer theme. The nice thing about doing a theme like summer is we can go broad enough that we could probably go most of the summer and not really get bored with doing like beach movies mm-hmm. or racing movies or, you know, whatever.
Anything themed with water, heat, beer, girls.
Yeah.
Of course, we can incorporate all of that.
Easily. Mm-hmm. Easily. So, so we'll be doing that. And I figured out that the first episode that we'll release when it is officially summer will be that episode. Okay. We'll be the first episode of that series. So we'll be jumping into that. And, so... Let's. I don't know if anybody else has any other business to attend to. Planning has begun for Sausage Fest.
Yep.
The ball is rolling, and
sometimes it's rolling back at us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't booked my hotel room yet, but I'm close to it. I have a giant to-do list, and it's on it.
Yeah.
I do it sooner than later.
Yeah. Okay. We have a couple of rooms already reserved, and. Keep an eye on sausagefeststl.com because as planning goes along, we'll be posting things there just to kind of build the hype. And if you're interested in donating, there will be links and such there so that you can join in. Yeah, we're working on deciding things like the charity we're donating to. I think we're keeping in the theme of breast cancer awareness. But we're looking at a new charity to donate to and new ways to donate. Just kind of mix things up.
Just as a side note related to donations and whatnot, if you're familiar with Luke Ski,
yeah.
He finished his Kickstarter program phenomenally. He originally started off asking for about $1,500, ended up with about $3,500.
Nice.
Wow. Yes, he says he's got one of his premiums was if you donated a very high level, he would come over to your house and mow your yard. He's now got 2 yards to mow.
That's awesome.
Yes, but he thanks everyone. He was able to purchase all his new audio and video gear, and a huge, huge, huge success for his Kickstarter.
That's fantastic.
I'm very excited about my first Sausage Fest.
It's sizing up. I think we're gonna have a really good time with it. So, all right. So now to the fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about this movie.
Yes,
a feel good movie if ever there was one.
Oh yes. Wow. I felt good after I watched it just yes. because I wasn't watching it anymore, and
jeez.
And the worst time I've ever had in my entire life is. So much better than this character's best day of her entire life. So
it was rough watching parts of that movie.
All right, so we're talking about Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. Turns out this is based on the novel Push and is not called Push because it was another movie in development called Push. I saw the cover of it, and it doesn't even look like that interesting of a movie. So
there was also some fights over the naming rights of this movie too.
Yeah, and the way I understand it, and it's been a while since I've looked into this, the MPAA actually controls naming of films that are like that fall with under its umbrella.
Similar, yes, that are similar. Isn't it? The rule is if you're the first to register it, you have the name.
Yeah, and what's weird is because it's like this, because the MPAA, and in fact, we should probably throw this out there for the Law of the Geek, because I think this could be an interesting topic for them. You can't copyright a name. You can register a trademark on it, mm-hmm. but you can't copyright it. So
a title, yes.
A title, right. A name or a title. You can't copyright them. I mean, that's why you see... a lot of times, you'll see television shows that will name individual episodes of their television show either names of movies or names of songs or things like that. there's no problem with doing that. I could write a book.
That's part of the fair use.
Right. I could write a book called, you know, Push. Even though there's already been one. Mm-hmm. It's not a big deal. It's perfectly allowed. Look at song titles. Mm-hmm. How many song titles are there that are exactly the same but for completely different songs?
Well, there's only so many ways you can rearrange words.
True.
After thousands and thousands of iterations, you're going to get a few repeats.
Well, so
I never knew that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, so the MPAA, though, controls the names of movies because they don't want confusion in the marketplace. That's why occasionally you'll see movies with slightly different names than the books that mm-hmm. they come out under. Scott Sigler, the podcast author that we, I think all of us enjoy, he has changed names of his novels in some cases because he hopes to get the rights to those novels out into movie producers' hands. Like, but he doesn't want to have to change the name again.
And further seed more confusion between his written work and his film translations.
Right, so Infected became Infectious.
Infectious, yeah.
Which was because the second book was Contagion, but he changed the name to Contagious. Mm-hmm. But because there was already a movie named Contagion in the works when he was working on the deal, so he actually had to retroactively change the name of both of his books to match for that. There's all kinds of interesting stories if you really look into the naming of movies versus books.
And you might explain, what is the MPAA again?
That's the Motion Picture Association of America.
Okay.
Speaking of Scott Sigler, I just, like an hour ago, finished reading The Rookie.
Oh, so what'd you think?
I loved it.
Yes.
I thought it was great.
Great little book.
Go Krakens!
I really liked it. Yes. I mean, I like football. I mean, I just thought it was really good.
Yeah, I thought it was... when I first heard the promos for the podcast, I did think, okay, now how the hell are you going to mix up science fiction, football, and a crime story all in one and not make it sound stupid?
It's brilliant.
I said, okay, this guy did it. It sucks you in, and it keeps you there.
Yeah.
I'm not quite on the geek level that you guys are, it did not confuse me.
I
was able to follow everything and not get lost.
No, it's actually the original iteration of it was a mature audience's story. When he rewrote it for hardcover and envisioned it as a series, he wrote it for a YA audience. It's actually written so that for like,
well, I thought he had two versions of it. One was
of the audio.
Of the audio.
Okay. Of the audio, there's two versions, but the print version is only... My understanding is the print version is for all audiences.
Okay.
In fact, if I saw today that this August, I believe, mm-hmm. The paperbacks of some of the GFL stuff is coming out.
The Rookie, the Starter, and the All-Pro.
The All-Pro, yeah.
And is the Starter the second one?
Yeah, Starter's the second one.
Although I have to start another book for my book club for this month, but I needed to finish The Rookie first.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's The Rookie, The Starter, The All-Pro, and then the next one in the series is The MVP. And I've already got that pre-ordered. Pre-ordered, it'll come signed.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and they're really nice hardbacks. They're beautiful books.
Since, Scott self-publishes this to his specification, he puts a lot of work into them.
Yeah, I mean, you pay a premium for them, but...
They're worth it. They come with a lot of extras that you would not normally find in a hardcover.
Right. Like, there's in every book, there is a center portion of it that is... full color glossy
cool.
That has like each book has different things. Some of it is like league rosters. Mm-hmm. Some of it is playbooks. So you actually see the playbook patterns all laid out in full color glossy. So they're really cool. It's really a nice production.
With a small high quality print run.
Yeah.
That's something that mass market publishers haven't apparently figured out yet.
Right. It's like $35 for it, but I mean, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And
it's not bad.
And they send you, I've gotten the ebook copies of them also. So it's like if you want to keep the book really nice, you can just leave it alone.
Yes. Collectible.
And read the ebook version of it. Or just wait a month or two and the podcasts start coming. So
when you bought the third book, I remember you tweeted a picture of it and I had not heard of him. So, and it just made me look it up and it looked interesting, and then I got the first book on my nook.
Oh, and his books are really good.
And he's a pretty fascinating person too.
We met him.
Yeah, 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
When he was doing a book promotion throughout the country.
Yeah, he came to St. Louis for his book promotion, and we all went to a bar and met him and had a beer with him, and he's a very cool guy.
Yeah. Very animated.
Yes, yeah.
Considering he was a former DJ himself, he understands. He's quite the talker.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we should probably talk about this movie a little bit more. All right, high level. What'd you think, Daryl?
It's a movie worth watching, but it's not worth watching twice.
That's fair. That's fair, Lena.
Yeah. It was really good. I was very pleasantly surprised at how good Monique was. I might see it twice. I just thought it really was that good, but it's tough. There are parts that are just tough to get through.
Yeah. My thought is that it's a great movie, but it is hard to watch.
Very hard.
Not because of production value, not because of acting, not because of writing, but because of content.
Subject matter, yes.
The subject matter is uncomfortable.
Tense.
Yeah, it's tense, it's uncomfortable, but it's the way it's portrayed, the way it's acted, the way the dialogue's written.
It's incredible.
It's very visceral and real, and yeah, it's a good movie.
And the uncomfortableness hits you in, what, the first 15 minutes?
The first 15 seconds, more like it.
Yeah, it seems.
I mean, it's pretty
cool.
The whole thing is just one emotional punch right after the other.
Yeah.
It never lets up.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into acting, because as far as I'm concerned, this is probably where the bulk of our discussion is going to be, because the acting was really good.
Yeah, big surprises all over the place. And I can see why this movie gained a whole lot of audience, not participation, but audience favorite.
Yeah.
Favorites.
Yeah. Yeah, Gaboray Sidibe is the lead character,
right,
Precious.
Right, it's her debut acting.
Yeah, her debut acting. Monique, I didn't realize she'd done...
I didn't know she even acted.
Yeah.
She did that, like those WB comedies where she was... You know, and I can't remember the name of it. I'm looking it up now. A Moesha type thing.
Yeah, see, yeah, so it's so you're on the camera and on the air now, and so we can't rely on you to look up things as quickly and as easily
the
anymore.
The big surprise about Monique was she was so
she was on the Parkers. I'm looking it up.
Okay.
Yeah, the big surprise about Monique is she plays against her type so much.
Well,
it is scary. I did not. When I watched this movie, I did not recognize her as her.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's not the Monique I knew from all these comedies. And she is raw, brutal, just a totally unlikable person.
Yeah.
From the moment you meet her, you honestly hate her.
and she's very brave as an actress, too, that she doesn't, half the time she doesn't look like she has any makeup on, or has makeup probably to make herself look worse. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, it's also the way she jumps back and forth in the emotions from being just a vicious attack dog 1 minute, and then suddenly flipping the other way and being this vulnerable, helpless little victim, or at least pretend to be a victim.
Yeah, yeah. I thought Lenny Kravitz was great.
For the short screen time that he's on, yes, he's surprising. I did not recognize him immediately until I saw him in the credits. Is it that's Lenny Kravitz?
Oh yeah, yeah.
The rock star. Okay.
I remember when he first showed up in that scene. I think I was doing something else, so I wasn't looking at it, and I was kind of sitting there. I went, That, do I hear Lenny Kravitz again?
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, and his, I think what's so great about his role is that it's so humble and understated. When, as a rock star,
yeah, you're always out very, there, huge, flamboyant.
Well, and his style is very flamboyant, and
yeah,
he's a very colorful performer.
Yeah, well, when your best known song is "Cult of Personality,"
well, that wasn't Lenny Kravitz.
That was Living Color.
That was Living Color.
Living Color. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Lenny Kravitz was "Are You Gonna Go My Way?"
Mm-hmm. Did he do "Let Love Rule"?
Yeah, he did "Let Love Rule." He did. Didn't he do a cover of "American Woman"?
Yes,
he did.
Yeah. So.
Or, oh my God! See, now that I'm looking things up, I'm blanking. Yeah. Intern brain is gone. For an Austin Powers movie.
That makes sense. Yeah. So
let's throw in Mariah Carey. Here's
Mariah
another
Carey.
Person I've never thought as an actress, and whoa.
Again,
very understated performance.
Again,
there.
A very humble performance, a very understated, a very low key kind of character. I loved that. I loved that the comedian plays this horrible, terrible, mean person. That the rock stars play these understated, very low key roles. It was really cool.
And I did read that Helen Mirren was originally cast in Mariah Carey's role. And Mariah Carey was replaced 2 days before they went into production.
I think that was a good call.
I think so, too. Much
I think Helen Mirren, I love Helen Mirren, but I think she would have been a distraction. And I wouldn't have believed her in that role so much.
And the other one, Paula Paxton. Man, talk about a total opposite of the supporting actress against the lead actress. And we'll get into it just a little later if we go to kind of the plot points of this thing. But, oh, man, if teachers all look that good, I mean, like, most kids wouldn't drop out of school.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting movie. The thing is, you know, it is definitely set in the late 80s.
Well, 87
yeah.
is what it's, pops in on the title.
Right. And the thing is, the story is kind of... There are some definite points that require it to be in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly it's...
Well, the big killer point is that near the end. Yes, that does require...
That and then the whole way the welfare system was set up and abused. Honestly, I knew people. I worked with people. Okay, I worked with people who gamed the welfare system. Mm-hmm. What does that tell you? Because they had a job and they were gaming the welfare system.
Well, at that time, though, this was right after the Clinton reforms kind of went into place.
No, this was 10 years later. That was still under Reagan.
Right.
Yeah, this would have still been in the Reagan era.
Right, because the Clinton reforms didn't occur until about the mid-90s.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, I knew people that gamed the system. Like, I knew a woman, I had worked with her. She collected welfare on her daughter and her granddaughter, and she was working a full-time job. And so, yeah, so it was...
Well, actually, when you say welfare, she was gaining cash payments for their support, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that it was cash payments and...
Food stamps. Because she was claiming them as dependents.
Yep. Yeah. And it was her adult daughter who worked, and her adult daughter's child.
Okay. So they were double dipping too.
Oh yeah, they were double and triple dipping. Yeah, it was pretty egregious. So even parts of that, it was like, you know, I didn't get really offended about the fact that, you know, she was collecting all this money and was gaming the system, because it was like, yeah, I knew people that did it. It's, you know, in the 80s, it was a lot easier to get away with because the tracking wasn't.
There was
nearly the same.
Yeah.
It was all manual. And I'll tell you a little side story later on about some of that, too, when I was working in Alabama at the time.
Yeah, so that didn't really bother me. The way the language was...
It's rough.
It was rough and raw, but very reminiscent of...
Yeah, and it needed to be.
The people that I, you know... Because I worked with people who... Yeah, in the St. Louis area, there's... A couple of areas that are much lower income, rough neighborhoods. in the 80s, East St. Louis was really bad.
Yes, it was an open war zone.
Yeah, and North St. Louis was bad, but East St. Louis was really bad.
Well, yeah, I remember.
And it's kind of shifted now. East St. Louis isn't great, but they've done a lot to try to
take the edges off. Well, yeah, because remember in the 80s, they were having open gun battles. The police did not have enough money to buy bullets for their own guns.
Yeah.
Their open sewage was running through the streets. The governor was ready to declare martial law and send in the National Guard.
Yeah, it was bad. It was really bad. I remember...
I don't even think the worst parts of Boston were that bad.
Yeah.
They're bad, but not that bad.
A guy I knew lived down there, and this guy, I mean, I'm not a small guy, and this guy, like, made me look tiny. I mean, he just big, broad shoulders. You know, this guy, like, stood this much taller than me, and he's like, it got to be about 9 o'clock, and we were working New Year's Eve, and he's like, I know we're leaving early, but is there any way I can get out even earlier? And my boss was like, hey, you know, we got stuff to do. Everybody's trying to get out. He's like, yeah, but 9 o'clock, the shooting starts.
God.
I get to get home. Well,
get undercover.
Yeah, well, it was basically because everybody went out and shot their pistols into the air to celebrate the New Year.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so he wanted to...
A rain of lead.
Yeah, so he was trying to get home.
Although now that I live in Florida, I hear these stories every New Year's Eve.
Yeah, so I worked with a lot of people who lived near or in East St. Louis. I offered to take one guy home one night, and he only let me take him so far. And he's like, "Just drop me off here. I'll walk the next couple of blocks." Like,
and you drive fast.
Are you serious? He's like, "Yes." It's fine. Wow. Drop me off here. It's like, whoa. Okay. So it's I appreciated the language and how raw and real it was, just because that's how raw and real it was.
What did you guys think of her fantasy dream sequences?
Those were really weird. I mean, I could see, after I sat down and watched the movie and sat and thought about it for a while, I could see what he was trying to do. Because there was one really creepy scene where Precious, you know, walks into her room. She sits down in front of the mirror, but it's not her reflection in the mirror. It's a beautiful white blonde woman. And she goes through the whole makeup scene, and then gets up, and as soon as she pulls out of the mirror, that image disappears.
Yeah.
So that's kind of early in the movie.
I really dug that. I mean, that was a nice statement about...
her self-image, yeah.
Well, not only her self-image, but the way... the image that she had of people who lived well.
Yes.
It wasn't just that she would be rich, is that she would be... skinny and white and rich.
Well, yeah, she mentions that in kind of her voiceovers occasionally, that she wishes she was this way. I wish I had lighter skin. I wish I had a boyfriend.
Didn't
who
she
had
say
lights.
At the beginning she wished she had a light skinned boyfriend?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wasn't that was like right near the very beginning?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she constantly fantasizes about her math teacher being her boyfriend, which she was kind of screwed up. But I can understand 16-year-old girl. Attaching themselves to somebody who's some sort of an authority figure.
And he was also, he was kind to her, and he was probably the only kind person in her life.
Well, yeah, at that time.
And showed her attention.
And probably the only kind male.
Yes.
I mean, in you know, at all. And he was a male authority figure, mm-hmm. which she obviously had problems with male authority figures. So,
A stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, so... we're dancing around the elephant in the room. This movie was rapey. Rapey. To the not the amount of on-screen rapiness.
It's not the dragon tattoo.
Of dragon tattoo.
No.
Of rapiness, but it was really creepy.
It's even more disturbing.
Yes.
Because it wasn't just rape, it was incest.
Mm-hmm.
It was impregnation. Multiple times.
Twice.
Yeah.
Initially, I thought they were saying there was three, and I was a little confused. but no, it was two.
No, it was two. She was repeatedly raped by her father.
And grandfather.
Was it her grandfather
also?
Yes,
she mentioned that earlier.
Okay, I don't
mentioned it like once though.
Yeah, I don't recall that. It's
in the part where she is talking. No, it was in the last part of the movie where her mother is talking about it, and she's babbling away in her emotional breakdown about it.
Yeah. So I want to jump ahead to that scene because for me, that scene. I mean, the movie was okay, and the movie was hard to watch. And it was good, but Monique's monologue, because it's mostly a monologue.
Right, it is. It's the last 15 minutes of the movie is the most intense.
Yeah, when she's in the office and she just has her breakdown and her gushing of here's what happened, and it wasn't even like she had this sense of entitlement about poor me. It was. Mm-hmm. This is the way my life is. Mm-hmm. The cool part was that it wasn't like she was trying to make excuses. It wasn't like she was saying she deserved anything because this is how her life was. She was saying, this is how my life is, and here's why I'm upset about it, and it has nothing to do with what you think I'm upset about. I am not upset about the fact that my daughter was being raped. I'm upset about the fact that my man wanted my daughter more than me.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, my daughter and my man are father and daughter. And it was like, whoa.
I couldn't even settle on one emotion watching that scene.
Yeah, because
it was all over the place. I didn't know what to think.
Well, that's the whole idea. It comes in such a huge gush, and her emotions are zipping over the place. It's supposed to leave you confused at the end because that's
especially
what the social worker. She's sitting here just totally dumbfounded by the whole thing, and that's the way the audience is supposed to be left.
We have been shown, and as the audience, we have been trained to know, not just to believe, but to know that this woman is a monster.
Yeah.
She is an evil, terrible, nasty person.
And then the monster suddenly
has a face now.
Now, yes, has faces and a feeling too.
Yeah, and it's like you almost feel bad for her. Almost?
Well, yeah.
But then you feel bad for feeling bad for her because of what she feels bad about. It's like I feel dirty feeling sorry for you.
Because you can say, I understand, I almost understand why she's so incredibly screwed up. But she was probably screwed up before that, but this just pushed her over the edge.
Yes, yes.
So you not that you want to make an excuse for her, no.
No.
But you can almost
now have some empathy.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it, is that you can have a little bit of empathy.
Yeah,
I don't feel sorry for her at all, but there is a logic to what she was doing and to the path that her character took.
Yeah, and in the end,
it's screwed up. But
yes,
there's
but
logic.
The one
there.
Thing you're left with the thing is, and this is kind of brought up even in The Girl and the Dragon Tattoo, is she had a choice.
Yes.
She had a choice at any time to stop all of this and never did.
Right. Right.
I still remember that there was that one part probably in the middle of the movie where the mother is yelling at Precious and she says to her, "You think you're so good because my man gave you two babies and I only had one."
Yeah.
And that just, I mean, that just hit me.
Yeah, just how twisted up her view is.
And it wasn't that she was treating Precious badly and treating the babies badly because she was an evil person. It was because she was jealous. And like it changes everything and makes you feel even weirder about all of it.
Well, yeah, yeah. That's the fun. The strange thing is, Precious had no choice in this, and she did.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And she's jealous because Precious is getting all the attention that she didn't ask for or want, and she's getting nothing.
Also, if Precious realizes that she can step out on her own, Monique doesn't get as much money from the system as she did before.
She's cut off.
Right.
I was real happy. I was the whole thing with the daughter, and I hate that they named her Mongo.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Yeah, that made me feel so bad. It's like that's not really what they're calling that baby, is it? Oh it is.
I kept waiting for them to say, but her real name is. But that didn't happen.
No.
I was happy that she got, you know, at the end she got her little girl back.
Yes.
It was, every scene that little girl was in was when the welfare lady comes over, and my heart was just being ripped every time.
So, yeah, I don't know if there's a whole lot more that I have to talk about in this movie.
Well, I think I'd say one thing is the emotion. Well, let's say the rescue of Precious as a person. The moment she starts sticking her head out the door, so to speak, and begins to learn, hey, everything I've been going through has been wrong, and I've never had a choice. I've never been presented an alternative. And when she goes to the alternative school and meets up with the teacher, Blue Rue.
Yeah.
And suddenly everything she thought she knew or was told is turning out wrong. Like, oh yeah, I'm not stupid. I'm just ill-educated.
Mm-hmm.
That can be fixed. I'm not a victim. I have control of the situation. Everything I've been told about homosexuals is a complete lie. They're the only people who treated me decent.
Yeah.
All the people who are supposed to be horrible to her are the ones that are being kind, and all the ones that are supposedly being kind are the ones that are being horrible.
Right, right. Yeah. That, and I loved that little cast of characters, mm-hmm. All the girls going to the alternative school.
Right.
It was just a really neat group.
Right. They all come in, they're all total smartasses and everything, and then suddenly they feel that the Precious starts telling her part of the story, and like, oh God, you know, I may be screwed up, but I'm not screwed up as her.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't got anywhere near these kind of problems. And they're not exactly complete trouble-free lives themselves.
Even in the way that she kind of discovered herself, the progression seemed very real. It wasn't like she just kind of sprang out, I'm strong, I can do this. It was kind of a piece by piece.
Right.
Which seemed a lot more real.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's a slow rebuilding process when someone has been torn down emotionally like that for so long. Time compression in movies, of course, gives you a rather false sense of how long this has been going on. Because when she starts in her writing her journal, she's barely making block letters. And by totally end of the movie, her cursive has gotten a lot better.
Right. Yeah. What I loved is that slow progression, and then that moment. She had a moment where she made the decision, and that was when she came back to her mom's house after the baby was born, second baby was born. And mom basically just attacked her, and she fought back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it was like, you know, I was cheering for her.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, you go. Finally, get the hell out of there. Yeah, that was a great moment, and was really the turn of her story.
Yeah, was she crossed that threshold and couldn't go back?
I believe she did. Monique won the Oscar for that.
Yes, yeah. She won Best Supporting Actress.
Now, having seen it, I can.
Yeah, you know what? She kind of deserved it.
Oh my god! Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and what's funny is I've seen Gabourey Sidibe on some other things, like I believe she did an SNL.
Yeah,
she's been on The Soup a couple times, just for a minute here or there, and she's hilarious. She's very funny, very very lighthearted. She's always got a smile on her face. Every time I've seen her outside of that, she's had a smile on her face.
She's adorable.
Who was it? She asked somebody to go to the Oscars with her, like, as her date. I can't remember who it was now. But it was somebody like George Clooney or something like that. And off the top of my head, I can't remember it. But I remember hearing about it. And it was just like, just a very bold, confident person. And I really dug that.
Yeah, and it's not only, this movie has been pretty critically acclaimed. I mean, it took awards at Sundance, Cannes.
I take that experience. Back. It was Justin Timberlake.
Justin Timberlake, geez.
She asked him to go to the Oscars?
She wanted him to take her to the Oscars.
Yep, I see it now. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Movie did fairly well at the box office for such a small, limited release. Mm-hmm. It actually has done quite well for its rather modest budget. Granted, it picked up a lot of promotion.
The more products we touch around the sink, the more Dirk.
It picked up a big boost from, of course, Oprah Winfrey and Tyler Perry, mm-hmm. who picked up some of the promotion and kind of pushed it. Well, got it the push it needed to get out into the wider distribution.
Weren't both Tyler Perry and Oprah producers on it?
Yes, they are producers, but there are several other producers.
Well, yeah.
They're just the biggest names on there.
They lent promotional assistance to the production.
Yes, that's like saying the Saturn V first stage booster just gives everything a minor push.
Yeah, so she was quoted as saying, I want to make Justin Timberlake and Anthony Mackie fight it out for the honor of being my date. I'm just going to throw them in the ring and make them do it.
That's cool.
Yeah. She's a pretty awesome person. Just in the interviews I've seen and some of the appearances she's done for things like The Soup and SNL. She just has a very great sense of humor about herself, and that's awesome. I always dig people that are like that.
Oh, this is an interesting thing in the little trivia tidbits in IMDb. That scene where she slaps the other student, she was told to slap her as hard as she could, and they didn't tell any of the other girls, so all the reactions were real.
That's awesome.
Hysterical.
That's fantastic.
I like that.
All right, I don't really have anything else to talk about.
No, I think we pretty much covered it. I mean, if you want a movie that's raw, plays with your emotions, punches you in the face, and then makes you feel good about it at the end, this is your movie.
Yeah, and we didn't even talk about...
Very well said, Daryl.
I mean, we didn't even talk about the ultimate... I mean, after everything, after all was said and done, we find out that, oh, yeah, her daddy died. Mm-hmm. The man that was her father died.
Oh, yeah.
And he had the HIV. And
you mean her HIV positive too?
Yeah,
which still in late 80s was still pretty much almost an automatic death sentence.
Right.
And what did the mother say? She said that she didn't have the HIV because they never did it up the butt.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was.
Yep. Yeah.
So she didn't have to be tested because
They didn't do it up the butt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because in the late 80s, especially, you know, if you weren't at all educated, which, let's be honest, most people weren't really educated in mm-hmm. how HIV was transmitted.
This is even more ignorant than average, yes.
Right. And it was, like we've talked about before, even at that point, I think we were, I think by 87 we were past the point of calling it grids still. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people just believed it was because of gay sex. Yeah, which...
But even then, by that time...
At that point, it's just... I mean, at that point, it would just be anal sex that they would be referring to.
Well, yes, but the thing is, though, even by that time, it was already known that the majority of AIDS was being spread heterosexually through intravenous drug users and prostitutes.
Right, right. In public, yeah, but I think in certain... I think there was still...
This way, it hadn't really sunk into... Everyone was still trying to deny that it was a disease of everybody, not just of one particular group.
Right.
There was still a hell of a load of denial. In fact, you can read the book As the Band Plays On.
Yes.
To get a good sense of just what was...
Or you can watch... Or you can watch the HBO miniseries
of the same name.
Of the same name.
And yes, get an idea of just of what public attitudes were.
Right, right.
And how it delayed getting prompt treatment to and a lot
thank,
of people.
Thank God Adam's not here so we don't have to explain history to him again. Because he would have then reminded us that he was only 4 at the time. Mm-hmm. So, though as we...
If that's the case, then he's never allowed to talk about Star Wars. He's never allowed to talk about...
Yeah. The other thing we just pointed out before we started recording, I think even before Lena was on, is that Gabrielle Sidibe is exactly 1 month older than Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, her birthday was 1 month ago, and she just turned 29 as well. So,
babies, all of them. although I did appreciate the fact that you kept telling him he was beginning his 30th year.
Yeah, he didn't. He's like, oh, I'm going to only be 29. It's like, it's not how math works, though, Chief.
You're not zero indexed.
Exactly. Yeah. Your first year ends when you are 1 year old. So, you know what? Your 29th year ends on your 29th birthday. Tomorrow you are in your 30th year.
Enjoy.
Yep. He didn't appreciate that.
I did.
Which just makes me even more gleeful.
Yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
All right. I think we're done.
Yep.
So next week we are going to discuss Fahrenheit 451, which we have determined, at least for the time being, is on Netflix Instant Play.
Mm-hmm.
So go check it out
before they change their mind again.
It doesn't go away.
Yeah, hopefully they keep it around and they didn't just throw it out there for a couple of days because it was right.
The tease.
Yeah, right as well. I mean, if they did it because of Ray Bradbury's passing, that's very awesome of them. First,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That because I know people are gonna seek it out. Like us. it's just cool that they're making that available. And it really is one of his best-known films.
Well, best-known works. The film came somewhat later, yes.
Well, right.
It's by an interesting director, François Truffaut, if you're French, of the French New Wave movement. And it's an interesting take on it.
Yes. All right. So we're done. Mm-hmm. We will see you guys next time. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, if you are listening to this, if you're listening to the audio version of this, we will include a link to the YouTube version of this because as soon as we're done recording, it's going to be available on YouTube. So if you're savvy and you look for the Backseat Producers channel, you can see videos of upcoming episodes before they are released. We live in the future.
The future.
All right. See you guys next time.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for joining us, Lena.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Yep. All right. Catch you guys next time.
Bye. Bye-bye.